Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to a slightly delayed big show. I do apologise, I've been working away and the new change to 8 o'clock snuck up on me and I didn't leave until half six, so I literally sat down about 20 minutes before we started. So I do apologise for being unprepared, but the people that are prepared and hopefully are prepared to help me out are a fantastic panel. Top left, Mr. James Hart, our man at the Beeb.
Hello, sir, and congratulations on finishing your mouthful before you came online.
Yes,
pretty much.
It was a ham sandwich, and I enjoyed it. Carved ham. What's the week been like, mate?
Really tiring. I think the weather hasn't helped because it's been a bit rainy, but also warm, and therefore it's too warm for a rain. And by the time I get to work, I'm just exhausted, and when I get home, I'm even worse.
I've been sweating like a fat bloke today. God, blimey. It's been awful. Bloody awful.
We're very good at turning the talk. About the weather, aren't we?
Yeah. Next to him, joining us from somewhere that really can't complain about coldness, but you said it's rained in Arizona this week, Gary.
Last night, yeah. It's funny when it rains here because, well, first of all, people forget how to drive. But secondly, I have clients call me and ask if they should be shutting their computers down at the office, and it's like, no, you still have to work. Just because it's raining doesn't mean we turn all the computers and servers off and go home. So I was slightly amused by that, but I said, well, thank you for calling and asking, but no, just leave everything on. You'll be okay.
Is it safe to go outside? Can we leave our homes?
Yeah, right. It sounds like such an unusual occurrence, you know.
That, the world is leaking.
Yes.
What's happening?
Some of it comes in here?
What is this wetness from the sky? Is this Judgment Day?
It is. It's Gabriel's horn leaking. Rapture. Beneath Gary, Ms. Sarah Gray. How you doing, Mrs.?
I'm very well, thank you. And because James didn't say it, good evening, listener.
We had beer last night. We had a good time.
We got drunk.
I didn't get drunk, but there we go.
And yeah. I got wet, which I hate.
We had a couple of beers. We let on certain secrets. Good time.
Yes, which shall remain nameless.
And last, but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan from Petaluma. How you doing, pal?
Hello, I'm good.
Has the week been good? Is the weather? Has it rained there?
Yes, we've seen some demon water falling from the sky, and I've taken shelter.
Was it red? Is it one of the biblical plagues?
No. But that is amusing to me that people would be so freaked out by rain, because it kind of I'm from Florida, so we were similar like that with lightning. It'd be like turn off the computers because Florida is the lightning capital of the world. You worry about just frying the whole motherboard.
Yeah, no, getting a spike. One of the sites I worked at, I packed up my laptop and finished off what I was doing and turned around and said goodbye to everyone. And all of a sudden, there was a pump and all the lights went out. I was like, what the hell was that? And the pole next to the porter cabins I was working in had been struck by lightning. And everyone had a spike through their computer and I'd literally just put mine away. I was like, yes, come on.
And what, it fried all the computers?
It fried them all, yeah. Yeah, they all went, all the phones lines, the whole phone network went down as well. It was horrific. There we go. The week in tech. Sorry, Sarah, are you going to say?
No, I was just going to say a similar story about what happened with me, similar sort of thing with a scanner, which went bang during a lightning storm.
Are we talking a document scanner or a full body scanner?
No, a document scanner. Oh, I was actually in the middle of... It was in the halfway through scanning the document when the lightning hit and it killed it stone dead right in the middle of the page.
And did the document look anything different other than half the document?
No, the document was fine, but the scanner was completely knackered.
Right.
Did the whole uses a regular scanner as a full body scanner?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just me.
No, I do. I put my head in a tumble dryer.
Apparently the detail's phenomenal.
That was the childish thing to do when we first got photocopiers in offices, if you remember, guys.
I'm picturing that's got to be like the low-budget, small airport solution. Like the passengers line up and they're just like, right, sit down on the scanner then.
Yeah, that's about right.
The week in tech. What a week it's been. Google Plus have offered Hangouts for Air, so you get to transmit and broadcast. We might have to have a go at that. But it won't work with Wirecast, because all it's doing is taking in a webcam input. So you can't shove a third-party thing in at the moment. It's got to be a webcam. We'll see. We'll see how we go. There'll be a way. I'm sure there'll be a way. Microsoft have debuted a Mirage system where two people in two different locations manipulated common objects through a curved mirror-like screen. Did anyone see that?
No.
Oh man, I picked it up yesterday morning, and this morning rather. It's basically, it looks like a little curved mirrored screen, and there's a guy on the opposite side who's a hologram, and there's some little holographic pieces there, and you reach forward with your hands and you move them, and they move in virtual space, so you can manipulate objects together. So he can grab it off you, he can turn it one way, and you can turn it back the other way. And
that would be cool. Imagine a chessboard like that.
Well, I got to say, actually, the first thing I thought was the porn industry's going to love this.
Oh, Lord.
We think alike.
It was either that or it was building blocks for kids. I couldn't think of anything else.
I was thinking backgammon, and you were thinking, well,
oh,
I think
yeah, you could play. Yes. Chess.
What were you thinking, course. Eric?
Oh, back to chess, the porn industry. Very good. Thank you. Open otherness. There we go. Badum-tish. And Google has got a driving license for its car in Nevada. And there was a video as well this week of an electric bike going from 0 to 200 in 6.9 seconds.
Roasty, wasn't it?
That was awesome. And you couldn't, but the thing was, you couldn't hear anything. There was engines revving. I'm like, that can't be right. There's engines revving. And then I realised that the engines were on other things. The bike itself, when it took off, the loudest thing was the tyre squealing on the concrete. It was great. Well done. Someone, Lewis. Should we start with Google's car? Are we impressed with Google's car? Would we like to have self-drive cars on the roads everywhere? Or is the art of driving something that's just more precious than that?
Well, this has been in the pipeline for years, actually, because I saw a program about a Mercedes that they tried to do. Basically, everybody is just terrified of it going rogue. And until recently, I mean, the fact that Nevada has granted them a license shows they have a massive amount of confidence in them.
You'd hope so. I mean, this thing's done 140,000 miles. It's been over the Golden Gate Bridge. It's been down the Las Vegas Strip. It's been through New York. And it's never had an accident, apart from some arse at a set of lights hadn't noticed it had stopped and rear-ended it, which is just completely impossible for it to control. So, I mean, that's it. I mean, this thing's 140,000 miles. That's a good incident. That's proof, I would have said.
Can you imagine pulling up at some lights, looking to your right and going, there's no driver?
Yeah, driver's in the back.
It's frightening.
My car on errands.
I went to a track day there's a place called Millbrook, which is not far from where you are, James.
That's not far from me, no.
No. And I went to a track day there, and there was a guy got in a Saab, and the bowl is specifically layered so that you can go at 70 miles an hour in the 70 mile an hour lane, and the car will just continue going round. They use it for testing, and guys take a book in there and sit and read a book because they've got to do like 20,000 laps or something. One of the guys got in there and he put the thing on auto cruise control, and he climbed in the back seat in this Saab, and they threw him off because the thing was just whipping around on its own with no driver.
Oh my God. It's going to give new meaning to the term sleeper car, because people just, I'm going to hop in the car, take a nap, wake up at the grocery store.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if you're going to have a car system that can drive you to and from, a great safety feature, we're never going to have accidents again if all the cars are that wired up. But do you have to be awake to drive it?
Probably.
What if you took just a nap? I mean, because the thing is, you've got to have something that's going to occupy the driver. Because I know damn well, you know, I've had a busy day. I come home, I want to sleep.
Yeah.
The thing that concerns me most is the fact that there may be a requirement to go back into manual mode. And the thing that just sort of rings alarm bells for me is the GPS bit. You need Sky. You need to be able to see the GPS satellites to use GPS, to be able to navigate, to be able to identify exactly where you are in the road. You get that wrong, you could end up taking a turn that isn't there.
Or you go through one of the tunnels in Switzerland.
Yeah.
What do you do then?
Well, tunnels are out, maybe.
Well, but the car's not just using GPS to guide it. It's looking at the lines on the road and et cetera. But the thing is that I'm a driver. I enjoy driving. One of the reasons I own a Mini Cooper is it's a thrilling car to drive. It always puts a smile on my face. It's very enjoyable. However, in rush hour traffic, there's no enjoyment at all. And people, the big issue that we have is distracted driving. It's been an issue forever, whether it was yelling at the kids in the back seat to what it is today with texting or talking on the phone. It's always been the same problem. So yes, if I'm sitting in rush hour traffic and I'm just stuck in traffic, I would like nothing better than to be able to return my emails, let the car inch along on its own. That's when I would use a service like that, a car that could drive. I wouldn't want to use it on I still want to drive. I enjoy driving. But to be able to take something as mundane as sitting in traffic and automate that so I can do other things, I think that'd be great.
I'm picturing now, Kerry, I'm picturing the M25 is a circular motorway that goes around London. And just like driverless cars just inching around it, with people in the back having arguments, reading their emails, just going about their daily lives stuck as the cars go around. That is for me, just the worst idea. That is horrible. Oh,
it really, really would be, as Chris Rea said, the road to hell.
Misery. Yeah.
I love the idea of driverless cars or cars that can basically drive themselves in a form of cruise control, like these Google cars, where as soon as you tap the brake, you're back in control for a case of emergency or something. I think, like Kerry was saying, some people find driving fun, but I think the vast majority of driving isn't fun. And I think a lot of it is just stop and go to light, stop sign to stop sign, heavy traffic. And I think sometimes when people try to derive fun out of driving, it can end up being dangerous. They end up speeding or not watching where they're going in a residential area or some kind of back road. So I think if we can somehow separate the fun driving from the times when driving just needs to get you where you need to go and make rush hour most efficient with the fewest accidents, the fewest stop and go parking lot style traffic on the freeways, I think this is great. We could start with maybe some automated lanes. Like we have carpool lanes now, have a lane or two or three for the automated cars, and you just tell the car when it's time to exit, my exit's coming up, and the car will just maneuver itself over. No accidents, no honking of horns, no problems. I think this is absolutely the future.
The comments in the chat room have started already. Wouldn't a Google car be in danger of taking you to a sponsored location as opposed to where you wanted to go? And imagine a headline, says Max S, man found dead in car had been driving around for weeks.
Well, why do you think Google is why do you think Google's experimenting now with those superimposed images over glasses? The next step would be superimposed over a windshield, give the driver something to do while they're sitting back and enjoying the ride.
Oh, man.
I think I know what Google's real motivation for this is, though.
Go on.
That's so that they can actually, instead of having this van that drives around taking the photos, the street view, they can just send it off its merry way and it can map the whole world.
That's
GPS companies would like that too.
Do bear in mind that Google already does that. If your traffic on your Android or your Google Maps, which when it tells you what the traffic's like, is calculated through Google devices and how fast they're moving. It's crazy.
But imagine this: if it was, say, in an electric car or whatever, and it could recharge itself, they could just send it off from the World HQ around the world, and it'll come back when it's finished its job. In fact, no, absolutely, keep going, because obviously remap it.
How is it going to gas itself up?
No, she said electric, so it just drives over and plugs and changes. And
yeah, absolutely.
It's just going to be like a Roomba that plugs itself electric in when it's left.
Yeah.
you could pair these up then with like a some kind of a service truck, like an ice cream truck that would go down the street and turn that into a vending machine. So you just have like these vending, like perpetually driving vehicles, constantly
poor
driving.
Ice cream man. The poor ice cream van driver.
Don't tell the supermarkets.
But hang on. How are you going to ask for a chocolate flake? And how are you going to ask for sprinkles? And how are you going to ask for...
You press a
button
on it.
Oh, no.
Vending machine.
And you can't have anything that varies from
the
norm.
What happens when it gets stuck and it doesn't quite fall down the chute and then you have to shake it?
Shake the car.
Half the fun of having an ice cream man, he's asking him if when he does a crap, he tills it out in a curl. I mean, it's gone. Google are ruining
Well, thanks for that visual.
Google are evil. I'm with Steve Jobs now.
More pragmatically, I think the idea of having Google drive your car, and the fact that if every car is enabled with Google, and again, this does sound a little bit dystopian, is that the cars can find the most effective route because obviously if all the cars are Google powered and they're all stacking up in a queue, and you'll end up with like back streets and other people's streets being full up with cars optimizing their routes to take you home, there will be fewer jams, or possibly it will reach the point where it's complete deadlock and you'll need an Uber computer to work out where the hell everybody's supposed to be going. Oh, I wonder if deadlock is more possible in that situation. This is I could make a movie about this.
You know, I was just talking about the rain here and how nobody in this state knows how to drive in the rain. I imagine that the car would drive and get better mileage. It wouldn't, floor the accelerator. I imagine that people would be, if they let the car do this. Like, I had a neighbor that just didn't have very good tires and was going far too fast on the freeway when it was raining and lost control of the car, and luckily didn't hit anybody, but severely damaged the car. So things like that could be avoided. But then I think places like Al-Qaeda could design viruses to infect the cars and have them all run into each other.
Oh, my life.
Actually, I want to come back to that with a funny comment that of something that is real in a new video game. But I'll do that first since I forgot my other point. The new Call of Duty Black Ops game that's been announced, it takes place in the future. And the premise is sort of a twist on the classic Terminator theme of, we built the battle robots and then they turned the robot army and then they turned against us. In this idea, we built the army. But then I guess the terrorists got a hold of it. In the trailer, they say, what happens when the bad guys get the keys? So then it's us fighting the robots that we built because they're now being controlled by the enemy.
Well, and there's a little bit of truth to that right now in the airline industry. A lot of the airplanes will fly themselves, and the potential to have a virus that locks, if you have throttle control and flap control like that, all drive by wire, there's no physical cable to override, then a virus could lock that throttle out, so the pilot no longer has control of that plane. There's a book about this that I read.
I'm led to believe there are cars now which are accelerating. I think the accelerator on my car hasn't got a cable to the throttle.
Correct. Yeah, drive by wire. It's just like
that's frightening.
Like turning the volume up on the stereo, and it was, the whole thing with Toyota and their accelerator sticking, which they determined never actually was a problem, and it was the drivers. But then anytime there's an accident, these companies are going to be sued. There's going to be huge liability for anybody who puts these in cars too. But
that's right. There's some comments in the chat room to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, the chat room's already come up with the ice cream sandwich van.
Google versus Bing Grand Prix.
The Google versus Bing. Well, no, that wouldn't work because, of course, Bing will be getting a tow from Google the whole way around. And the question from Jenks is a great one to discuss here. If Google is driving the car and you have an accident, is Google going to pay out for the insurance costs? Would there be an insurance if you're not operating the vehicle? Where's the liability?
No, there'll be an advertisement for lawyers and
that'll pop up instantly.
I actually think this is an easier problem than you think, Carrie, because I think that part of what these cars would have would be the ultimate black box, like they have in airplanes, to recover what happened before the crash. It conceivably could be uploaded.
Cars have that now.
They do, for insurance. A lot of insurance companies insist on it, don't they? Including cameras as well.
Right. Well, this would obviously have more because it's driving itself. It's aware of where it is. It's aware of how it's choosing. It would be aware of the car's decisions would be tracked. So the car's decision to speed up or to brake, all that stuff would be tracked, conceivably even sent in real time through the air to Google or to your insurance company or however that would work. But I think that statistically, you could easily get to a point where enough tests have been shown, enough of these cars have driven around the world on public roads to determine that they have a safety record, fewer crashes statistically than human beings. And I think what does an insurance company thrive on if not statistics? So I think once you can get these to the point where, and I think it's going to move in slowly into our lives, into our cars. It's going to start by having just kind of crash prevention. It won't be hands off, I'm going to take a nap kind of thing, but it will be, it's already, the cars can park themselves. Ford has this, a lot of cars do, I guess it's using some kind of sonar or distance judgment, and then it can parallel park itself. So extend that to while you're driving, as the car can sense and computers can sense way better than a human being can, when a rear-end collision is coming on and can apply the brakes as necessary. Not to mention getting traffic details from maybe other autonomous cars down the line could stop a huge pileup that cascades in a ripple effect. I think a lot of these things come in first as safety, and then once they're proven, would be actually a better liability for the insurance companies than a human driver.
Well, okay, and then what happens when the car locks up? You have to turn it off and back on again? I mean, there's so much.
They have to do that with trains, you know.
What's that?
In the UK, sometimes the trains crash and they have to turn the power off and on again.
Well, there's some trains in the UK, mate, are running on computers that are running Windows 3.11.
Let me just say this.
I have done some work for a certain firm, and the guy that maintains the system on the train for the people who use it, the providers, I said to him, so what do you do if you, because they get monitoring equipment, and they get brand new monitoring equipment that was made last month. Now fit it on the train, but by the way, it's got to talk to the mainframe system that's on the train, which is running Windows 3.11. And he said, I have to go home and write a driver at the weekend. That's it.
Gosh.
Like, you're having a laugh. But it's true.
Wow.
Because a lot of trains are running at least XP, or most XP. There's others that are running Windows 95, and there's others that are running Windows 3.1.
God, and we're worrying about IE6.
As their OS.
Yeah, well, we're worried about Google driving cars, but Microsoft are driving trains.
That's one blue screen of death you don't want to see.
Well, here's the thing. So we just bought a Hyundai Veloster, and this car emails us and tells us monthly, here's the mileage on your car, here's the status of the tire pressure monitoring system, here's the status of this, and you know, and if there's anything that doesn't have a green check, you should have it checked out. And you know, the car transmits this, you know, through basically like a Bluetooth, I guess, that's the cellular connection that's built into the car. The car doesn't have GPS, and this is kind of a neat idea. You push a button, say where you want to go, they calculate it on their end, and then they download the information to the car to display on the screen, which I thought is pretty brilliant. That way I don't have to update maps and do all that maintenance. And as it is right now, you know, insurance companies here in the States, and they probably do this in England too, you can opt for a potential decrease in your insurance for some insurance companies by allowing them to monitor how you drive for a month. And it's just a little plug that plugs into the computer's onboard diagnostic. And it shows, you know, how hard you brake or how hard you accelerate. And that determines whether or not you're eligible for a discount on your insurance based on how you drive and how often you drive. It doesn't calculate where you drive. But basically what I'm saying is a lot of that information is already being stored in cars as far as like this black box information. I used to work for a guy who was an expert witness for, you know, major car accidents and things like that. And that's one of the things they had to do, is pull the data from the box in the car to determine the throttle position, whether or not the brake pedal was pressed, how many RPMs the engine was at the time. All that is already stored in the car.
There's a comment from Missy in the chat room. She suggested the Google Hovercraft should be the next thing, which there's a lot of people meeting with that and going, yes. And also she's saying she's got a Jeep which has got an intelligent system that when it runs out of gas, it stops. And that's how it tells her.
And that Google Hovercraft, that could run forever. It would just run on human flesh.
I'm not sure.
That's the Google zombie helicopter. Helicopter?
Hovercraft. Yeah.
Have you guys seen those demos on YouTube where someone throws a little, I think it's the principle of magnetic levitation, like a maglev train. They throw like a little magnetic disc. It looks like a hockey puck, throws it onto a little track, and then it just kind of bounces and like scoots along this little track in a circle. Has anyone seen that video?
Yeah, well, that's, I saw, have you seen, what was it? Was it The Spy Who Loved Me with the tea tray? James Bond film.
That you used for decapitating.
Yeah, they used it to cut a bloke in half. Tea tray, steel tea tray, and they put it on a maglev and boom.
Yeah, it was on, it was on a sort of like a hover thing, wasn't it? And he just let go of it and it decapitated.
It was a maglev thing, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, all that is rippling current, isn't it? So it's sectional and it ripples the current so that it creates motion by the fact that it's off, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off.
Mm.
Well, anyway, what I was going to say was that as we're talking about Google having their own lanes of autonomous driving lanes, we may as well make them magnetic levitation at the same time. So you could have your regular car with the wheels, but then as soon as it hops onto that special lane, and your car is now hovering and you're just hovering down the road.
Star Wars.
Yes, exactly. Smoothest ride ever.
Oh, man.
You see, the next stage to this is buses and sort of public transit, which runs on these on the road, but on maglev tracks powered by Google. So you don't even need the racist bus drivers.
If someone were to steal your car, could you just tell it to drive back to you with them still in it?
Come back.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
You could lock the doors.
Exactly, I mean, like they do on bait car.
Drive to the nearest police station.
There's a question here about, you know, what are you going to do when the Google car becomes self-aware? Is it? They've already made that film, I suppose.
I'm going to marry one, I think.
Christine.
Well, what's it going to want to do, though?
I mean, if it'll do the dishes, I mean, what else could you want?
It's going to take you to Taco Bell.
There is one thing.
What?
You marrying a car.
When your car becomes self-aware, what is it going to do, though? What does it want to do that you're not letting it do?
It depends whether it's fitted with a female voice or a male voice, really, doesn't it?
It's going to want to run and play at the park.
If it's a female voice, it's going to want to get cleaned more often, be treated nicer. It's going to want to have things that glint and bought for it. And Sarah's leaned back in because she's really pissed off at me now.
No. I'm just.
If it's got a male personality,
You guys hang yourself. That's all.
Oh, if it's got a male personality, it's going to be tooting the horn.
Burn each other off lights, won't they?
Yeah. Oh man, that'd be so cool. Just sitting revving, run.
It's just going to park itself at the sports stadium.
Why on earth, if you're going to make an innovative vehicle that's going to be cutting edge and thrusting, would you buy a Toyota POS? I mean, it. The Prius
what point
is
of sale.
Not, it kind of it rhymes with that. I mean, the Prius is not exactly the most exciting car in the world. It's renowned for being
the Prius. You know, one of the problems with the Prius is a lot of people who studies have shown that in spite of the fact they're getting double the mileage, they're driving twice as much. They're like, oh, I'm getting great mileage. So, and the average mileage, annual mileage put on a Prius, they say, is about twice that of a regular car. So it's just completely offsetting the point. And it really frustrates me if I'm on the freeway, speed limit is 65. I'll usually do about 75. That's normal here. And then I'll get passed by a Prius at 90. And I'm like, why do you have a Prius? At 90 miles an hour, a Prius will get about 19 miles to the gallon.
Oh, they're crap. If you do motorway driving, don't buy a Prius.
Really?
Well, you know, Toyota makes, let me just say this. Toyota makes a very good, reliable, soulless car. If you want to just get from point A to point B and you don't care about the car, you take no enjoyment from driving, you just want reliability and they do that well. Now, Toyota used to make fun cars. They used to make the MR2 and the Celica. They just don't have anything right now. They've just gone to these really dull...
They make cardboard boxes.
I used to have an MR2. Loved it.
Couldn't one of the reasons that people drive their Priuses more often could be that when they have to go on a road trip or they have to choose between which of the two family cars they're going to take or something, they choose the one that has the better mileage?
Well, the one that doesn't scare the living crap out of them for 2 hours.
If you're going to go on a motorway drive, I've done some work for some firms that thought they'd do their social responsible thing for their footprint, and they'd offer Priuses on the fleet, and they bought Priuses, and they said that they absolutely suck on mileage if what you do is mostly drive on motorways, freeways, because the engine's running all the time, and the engine's not particularly efficient over anything else, and you hardly ever drive on electric, so you're not actually saving much petrol anyway. And they've said that they've actually found them to be more expensive for running costs and petrol costs than other cars.
Well, they did this on Top Gear, by the way, and Jeremy Clarkson, you know, had a Prius. All it had to do was keep up with, like, an M3 on a lap. And the M3 at the end of it got much better mileage than the Prius. And his conclusion was, it's not what you drive, it's how you drive it.
Yeah, absolutely. Have we done the car?
Yes.
Zoom, zoom.
What do you fancy next?
Light bulbs.
You fancy one of those brand new light bulbs?
Yeah.
You've got to say.
The LED ones that last 20 years.
The International Lighting Fair does not sound like a barrel of laughs, does it? Even with a 60-year-long light bulb. But you really want one of these LED light bulbs.
You've just won the Super Bowl. Where are you going next?
Hey?
The International Lighting Fair.
No, any kidding.
I bet there won't be any kind of what are they called? Clothing malfunctions during the midterm break on there, will they?
Wardrobe malfunction.
Wardrobe malfunction, that's what they're called. At the lighting fair. What was I going to say? LEDs are there are some, I understand that there are some towns in the US which are all the streetlights are LED. I'm led to believe that the local councils have invested in them because actually, although the capital cost is greater, the running costs are so much smaller. Now that's long-term thinking. Really clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, why did you do that here?
Well, it's cost, I suppose. Initial cost is quite an outlay. Mm. But, I mean, has anyone got any LED lights around their house other than like a little pocket torch or a work lamp?
Yeah, my studio's lit with LEDs.
And? How much were they? How bright are they? And are they worth the money?
They were about 15 quid each. They're equivalent to 30 watts. So they're not the 50 watts. Basically, I've got 10 in my two, four, six. I've got 8 in my studio at 50 watts each. That's 400 watts of electricity. And it got really hot. And now these are 5 watts each, so 5, 8 to 40 watts in total, and the studio is adequately bright. They're not super bright, but they're adequately bright.
Yeah, I mean the lighting,
and they're not going to blow, which is a brilliant thing.
The lighting here is I've got 3 round diffusers, and they're lit with long life bulbs, and they're I can't remember what they're. I think they're 20 watt consumption, but output 120 watts equivalent. And then I've just got a little tiny thing here that just puts a bit of light on me to blow out the screen from behind. But we got some money back on the electricity bill since I changed the lights to long life ones in here. But LEDs, they're bright. Cool. They're real bright, but they're very blue as well. That's the thing that bothers me. And the videos don't, video doesn't adjust. I mean, Eric, you're the video guy here. Does the blueness of the light cause an issue? Because there isn't a setting on most video cameras or... yeah, those are LEDs, I grant you that, but that's a game from the 1970s, Sarah.
No, it's something I built.
Right.
But
very good.
She's building a self-driving car!
Yeah, just starting with the kit bit on the front.
That's right. Yeah.
The swishing lights.
That's cool.
Yeah, when I get the engine going and the tracking systems, then we'll be in. No, but Eric, I mean, the light settings for LED, I find them very difficult to light for.
Most LEDs, even the kinds like made from light panels that cost thousands of dollars to light a studio or even a small production, they're at the temperature of sort of a cloudy overcast day, which is the bluest you can get, and in order to warm that up you have to use filters. I haven't been in the market, but just to answer your question, I have no LEDs in my basic light fixtures, but all I have are compact fluorescents.
Yeah.
Everyone take else? A while to warm up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting though. You look at the temperature of all of us, and James is not particularly blue.
Yeah, I'm using compact fluorescence here. I've got two.
On top
cheap lamp. Yeah, I've got cheap CFLs.
Just for those of you on the audio podcast, just to demonstrate how cheap it's fallen to pieces.
No, actually, I've put a CD on top to stop it from.
Mate, you should have just gone with the joke.
Sorry. I think they were literally 6 quid from Argos, so a very good deal. They don't do them anymore.
Now, Google is not renowned for its collaborative systems working very well. Wave has waved goodbye, and Buzz didn't create one. But Google Plus has got Hangout features now that go to broadcast Hangout features this week. I thought it was quite interesting. You know, has Google Plus had any more traction than the other two? Is it a better system, and does anyone use it? I mean, I don't actually go on and socialise on it, although we just use it for the Google Hangouts on Friday nights after we finish the shows. But you know, is it a better system than Wave or Buzz? Has it got some traction, or is it just rubbish?
I'll go first, I guess. I feel bad for Google Plus. I was looking at their new announcements, their new layouts. They're trying to be Facebook, and I feel like they're putting out these ads on YouTube, maybe on Real TV as well, I'm not sure, that are pitching it exactly like Facebook, but Facebook is so much farther down, so much more evolved and a complete product. With the whole user base is there, comparatively no one's on Google Plus. Really, the only people using Google Plus, it feels like, are the people who have an ideological opposition to Facebook, or just have a greater brand affinity for Google than Facebook. In terms of actual features and offer and the network it provides, there's really no benefit to using it over Facebook. And therefore, when I see things like this, this is basically their YouTube. Remember, YouTube Live was going to roll out to people starting a year ago. They only gave it to a couple of select partners. And ever since, I mean, I've been on the waiting list for over a year now. Instead, they've turned it into this. They've rolled it into Google Plus, and they're rolling more of their Google or YouTube features into the Google Plus environment, the Google Plus domain and branding. And I think that's a mistake.
I mean, Missy in the chat room saying Google's like a gym that everyone joins but never goes to. And that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, what's quite interesting is my kids, they signed up for Facebook so they could get in contact with their cousins and stuff, but their cousins are a little bit too young for it at the moment. But they don't go onto Facebook. And what happens is they get emails saying, this interesting thing's happened on Facebook. This interesting thing's happened on Facebook. Why don't you come back and have a go? Guess what I'm getting with Google Plus? These interesting things happen on Google Plus. Why not come back? It's exactly the same kind of desperation, the fact that they're sending emails out to people saying, please come and play. And this, what's happening is there's nothing really interesting happening at all on Google Plus. Please don't be offended if somebody's posted something interesting on Google Plus and I've missed it.
I don't know that there's not anything interesting. I'm just never there to see it. And I think the thing is that if you look at Twitter, I react an awful lot more to Twitter because I've got notifications, because I've got a desktop system that sits in the corner of the screen. And, you know, I can see new tweets popping up and things like that. They scroll, they appear. TweetDeck used to do that particularly well. Twitter app does it okay. Tweetbot does it fantastically on the iPhone and the iPad. But Google Plus just doesn't seem to have that. Again, it's always been Google's fault. They don't have that desktop output.
I mean, for me, I just think it is just unfortunate, the timing. I mean, like you, Ewan, Twitter is my social media app of choice, and that's because I adopted it and have stuck with it. I don't tend to use Facebook. I don't tend to use much else. And no doubt if Google Plus had come along before Twitter, it might well have been that I used. I do find it really good. And when I make the effort to use it other than just to hang out, it is really good. But I'm just so, you know, my instinct is to go to Twitter because that's the one I've been using for best part of 5 years now.
Hangouts are the only redeeming feature.
I think it almost feels a little bit tacky of Google to go after products that people have already embraced and are totally happy with and content with, mostly Facebook and Twitter. And, well, even some other products like Flickr, YouTube, they're even competing with some of their own services. I think the way that they're rolling in a lot of their own services, sort of tying them up in a nice pretty package and saying you can only do this in our service, feels a little bit like Microsoft at its worst. I think it feels like a synergy creation of their various products without actually offering anything new or innovative. And I think that, but it says, come in, log in, be in our little playground and don't leave to go to the rest of the web. And without really providing a greater benefit to the users than other services, I don't think that's a good thing to do.
Tone has said in the chat room that the benefit that they're getting from Google, Google Plus is, I'm quoting Tone here, so if you want to sue him, Google, I'll give you his address. Google Plus is a communications tool that's used the world over where people come together so that they can bitch about movies and share pornography with one another. I've never got any porn off Google Plus. I don't say that about it.
No, nor have I. No, I'd look for it. Tone and DT both say the same thing, incidentally, that it needs... Sorry, Sarah.
Oh, I think I was about to say the same thing that you did, that they need a... it needs a USP.
What is that? What they're doing, this shared streaming hangout thing, which potentially bypasses the hell, which is the adverts on Ustream, and gives people a platform to broadcast themselves through video, may actually be the way ahead. Because if they can get themselves... That's something that Facebook doesn't offer yet, and Twitter certainly doesn't. Yes, you can upload stuff which has already happened, but you've got services like Quick and indeed Ustream, but they don't... If Google Plus can be the home for something, which are these collaborative hangout things, a kind of like what they failed to do with Wave, collaborative. It may actually be the thing that saves it.
I mean,
they can get people to use it.
here's the I mean, we currently use Wirecast, and we broadcast through Justin TV. At the moment, Wirecast doesn't do webcam emulation, but it's supposed to, apparently. It's coming in the summer, this summer. Would you ever see us using Google Plus to do a show? And I don't think you would, because you've all got to come via your own webcam. You've got to come to the, the browser for me to see you. So again, then I mean, the quality on the webcams is particularly poor at the moment. Anyway, it's going to record all of that. Are they going to have the white borders all the way around? Is their advertising going to be on there instead of yours? There's no controllability from what I'm seeing from what the plans are with it. It doesn't seem to work that way. You know, I've seen Leo Laporte's network using it to do a few hangouts on the live stuff when they've had keynotes and stuff, but it just doesn't seem to hack it.
It's awkward for a live public broadcast because everyone who's connected, just the viewers who may not even want to talk, are all displayed at the bottom of the screen. And in its official recording, Google's automated recording of that event, which is a lot harder to do in a studio environment, for instance, like the home base, like you would be doing right now as the host of this show, you'd be recording it there, controlling it there in Wirecast. Yeah. You don't have that control in Google, like you were saying, but you'd see every one of the viewers and listeners and audience down at the bottom. And if they so much as accidentally make a sound, their video in theory pops up at the top and puts them front and center, like they're trying to say something. If you have hundreds of thousands of viewers, that is a complete non-starter.
It'd be good for a phone-in type show, I suppose, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good reason that Skype, as such, don't allow video in conference calls as standard. And that's purely because the amount of bandwidth that it uses. Imagine how, I know that it's only displaying them as little images, but how much bandwidth is that using for everybody that's using it? And the more people you've got in it, more bandwidth it's going to use.
It'd be specifically bad for a call-in show, I think, because you'd have no way to control who's talking at any one time.
Mm-hmm. Good points. Oracle versus Google has. Do you really want to talk about this?
No.
I don't either. I don't know why.
I've got an interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Go for it. No, go on, Eric. For God's sake, save us from Oracle versus Google.
Okay. Well, I forgot to put this in, but the Wall Street Journal had an article about could texting save retail stores? And it's an article about geofencing that these stores want to have. Where people take their phones into the store and actually go down the aisle looking at their phone for deals and other specials. And that's going to save retail. I have thoughts on this. What do you guys think?
So it's just like near field communications, isn't it?
But explain the ins and outs a little bit more then, Eric.
Well, I'll just very quickly say what I think about it is what they need to do is they need to get the sales. And at the moment, there are some shops you go into and it's basically a showroom that you bugger off to Amazon afterwards to buy.
Right. Right. That is the problem that they need to fix. Actually, you know, retail is an interesting subject because it's partly the economy and partly, you know, people not having the spending money, but it's also a change in buying habits. I was reading a fascinating article a few weeks ago about how no new indoor shopping malls have been built since 2006 in the United States. The only ones being built are called outdoor lifestyle centers, and they have flowing water and nice trees and things, and that all outdoors. And what they're not saying is it's the upper crust of the lifestyle. It's not for the people who can really afford to shop there. It's you have to drive to the special suburbs, right? But they're called lifestyle centers. So there's a change that people are shopping. The only stores that are being successful now are those high-end luxury brands that get the rich people to come in and browse, because all these low-margin products that are, you know, the kind of stuff you buy at an electronic store, at a Best Buy, at a now extinct Circuit City or something like that. Even basic clothing, lots of things like that can be shopped for and bought, tried on if it's clothes, returned, free shipping and everything more easily on the internet. And people don't want to drive and go through closed indoor malls that feel like parking garages and feel like just dark, cavernous places to shop anymore.
I mean, that description of just what you've said there sounds like the kind of horrible, eerie music that was in Demolition Man. You know, when they're all walking around to Be Well. You know, that kind of, can I think of the word that I'm looking for, but it was like, you know, the patronizing big brother, soft big brother rather than the bad big brother.
I mean, yeah, yeah. Kind of. So, yeah. So what the story is saying is that they want to bring people back into retail stores and to not just use them as a showroom to then check the UPC, check the price, then buy it more cheaply online. Free shipping from Amazon gets there the next day and then return it without even having to drive it back to the store. Right. So what they want to start having these beacons of text messages and geofences, which is mostly GPS and maybe some Wi-Fi location as well, sort of saying, hey, come to our store. You're nearby. Here's a special deal to make you come into our store. And then once they're in the store, they want to then have you look at your phone walking up and down the aisles to see what aisle I should be going into next or what area of the store or the mall or wherever you are has a special sale. And my complaint about this is I think that's going to be the death blow to retail, not the thing that saves it. Because if you're training your customers to do their online shopping in your store, you're training them to do their online shopping at home.
Well, there was some weird thing that came out the other week about Walmart or Best Buy. I think it was Walmart, where they said for online purchases, you could go to the store and pay in cash, and then it would be delivered to the store and you'd pick it up. And I'm kind of like, If I go down to the store with cash, I'm walking out with it. Otherwise, you can stick it up your ass.
I want it now.
Exactly. If I'm going to get in my car and drive my lazy backside down to the store, I want to walk out with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If I've got to wait for it, might as well order it online, slower. Yeah.
Sounds like you guys need automated cars. It's a lot of this stuff I have to get in the car stuff.
No, I mean, the thing was...
Well, that's what you want to do, is you want to program your car to go to the shop, and the bloke just slings a sting in the boot and drives home with it. Instantly.
That's what's going to save retail, actually. It's not going to be Best Buy stores anymore. It's going to be a Best Buy truck, autonomous warehouse in a truck.
It's the new Ford Butler.
You click buy it now, and within 30 minutes or it's free, the Best Buy truck rolls up to your house, stops, and you get out, and you slide your card, you get your product, you go back in, the truck drives off.
I think one of the big issues here is sales tax. So, for example, as a gun enthusiast, for me to purchase a gun is around an average of about $400. For a gun. So sales tax here is almost 10%. It's close enough. We'll just call it 10%. So if I purchase that gun locally, I'm paying an additional $40. If I purchase it online, it's often, $6 for shipping. So there is that incentive that it makes it difficult for a retail shop who's potentially paying the same price for a product, but the sales tax gives them an unfair disadvantage or a discouragement from a consumer who's going to spend a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
So I would be surprised or wouldn't be surprised if the local municipalities are more interested in saving retail than the retail companies are, because the retail companies could easily just, and more inexpensively, have a building that no customers go into and a website and ship things out. It would actually probably be cheaper. And they probably get a lot more business since locality is no longer an issue. But, you're going to shop at the mall that's closest to your house, more than likely. You're going to shop at the Radio Shack that's closest to your home versus you type something in .com. It doesn't matter where it is in the world. And it doesn't matter where your customers are in the world. And I think that's going to happen to retail. And then the municipalities are going to have to, start collecting sales tax on online purchases. I mean, some have already started that, but they're going to lose so much revenue.
Carrie, I think that's actually a really good point. Something that I read is that some of those big name chain stores that you see at malls and other places, especially like on Madison Avenue, sort of the flagship stores for big brands and big international shopping locales, those exist at a negative operating costs. They lose money. They exist to be just showrooms, basically, to get people attuned to that particular brand, like the flagship Nike store, or just any kind of a flagship store. Or nowadays, like I was reading, just a lot of retail stores at shopping malls that you would normally think are there to actually make money. And the context I was reading this in was that mom and pop stores, small stores, can't compete with a store that opens up next to them or buys them out and then exists not to turn a profit, but to lose money on its actual location and merchandise in order to drive business to its other locations or to its online store.
I've never heard of that before, but clearly when Amazon was starting and Jeff Bezos took a lot of grief from the media, but it was losing money and he said, we're building a brand and it will continue to lose money for a couple of years, but when people think to shop online, they're going to think Amazon, and not just for books, but for other things. And you just wait and you see. But yes, losing money is part of that process, a little bit of like what you're explaining. And of course, now it's exactly what it's become. Of course, the press don't say, hey, remember when you said this back then? You know, you never get that follow-up interview.
I think that sorry, Carrie.
No, go ahead.
I was thinking the one thing that was said an awful lot at the start is there are certain items that people will never buy online because they want to touch and feel and understand it before they put it. You know, clothes, they're never going to buy off clothes because they want to know it fits. Absolute bunkum now. My wife goes online. She's got a Next account. She goes to Next online. She orders a pile of stuff. A woman turns up the following day with a pile of stuff at the door here, gives it to her and gives her a chitty. They debit her card. She tries it on. She calls the woman up and says, three things don't fit. Here they are the following day. And they credit her debit card. And that's it. It's done.
Zappos. Easy.
3 days. And
but it's hard to product's in and out. To go tanning online.
Well, no, but I mean, people are saying like fruit and veg. You know, people are never going to go food shopping online because it just, you know, they want to see what they're buying. Rubbish.
No, people do food shop, but you're not really eating out. Yeah.
While we were on air, we just had a Tesco delivery. Didn't actually set my foot outside the house.
Yeah, I mean, we want pizza. I order online.
People do shop for groceries online, sure, and there are going to be things you just that online isn't going to be. Capable of doing. However, I'm the same as the next person. I was at a Fry's Electronics and I saw this keyboard, and you know, they have a whole line of keyboards, and I want to feel it. I'm a typer. I want to see what do the keys feel like. Then I see the price on it, and I immediately start, okay, it's $130 for this keyboard, 10% sales tax on top of that. And then, what's Amazon or Newegg have this keyboard for? Same $129, but free shipping and no sales tax. So, yeah, guess where I bought it from.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't have even got to the stage of going and looking at it in a store. I'd have just, I don't buy any electronics from a store. I haven't bought electronics from a store for 2 years. First place I go is online. Google shopping, find the cheapest one, go buy it.
It's a keyboard and it's, you know, I type a lot, and I would be buying and sending back 20 of them before I found one I liked.
Well, if you could do that, though, see, that's the thing. That's what finally took me from the retail stores to the online is when Amazon, actually, is when I got an Amazon Prime subscription. I love that thing because anything now, I think, you know, I need to buy a new light bulb. I'll ship it to me in 2 days for free. You know, it's great. As we talked about with, I think it was like headphones or something that I tried out recently, they let you just, you try it out at home. If you don't like it, you ship it back. And in most cases, they don't even charge you a restocking fee or return shipping or anything like that. So
it takes a 5 minute thing and turns it into 6 weeks. If I have to keep buying and sending back until I find one I want, I have other things to do.
Keyboards is a small thing, but let's say digital cameras, you know, something big where you really feel like I don't want to buy this unless I can test drive it. Essentially, as long as they make shipping free and easy and return shipping free and easy, and they have the best price, you've really eliminated all need to buy it anywhere but online or from a catalog.
And I don't even understand how Amazon does that. I've got an Amazon Prime account as well, and I have ordered things early in the morning and had them at my door that evening. I have no idea. I mean, they have a van, a minivan that's got it says OnTrack, a magnet on the door. And someone's getting paid to drive around town from a local, you know, they load the van up from a local Amazon warehouse. And I don't know how much this cost them in gas and labor to deliver to me a $10 thing I ordered, but that's pretty cool. But how does a retail store compete with that? And one of the more frustrating things when you get into a retail store is having to deal with somebody who can't answer your questions, or even trying to find somebody, especially these big box stores, who just find a person to help you. Usually they don't know what they're talking about. And then they have to find out if it's in stock, and then you have to wait in line to check out.
And they don't know the products, and they really are no help at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can get all that information you need online.
Well, that's it exactly. There was a story I told where I was buying an oven, a range, and the kid at Best Buy, they're not on commission, so he could care less if you buy it or not. But on the other hand, he's not pressuring you to buy it either. And it had a thing on it called kosher mode. And I said, well, what does that do? I'm just curious. What's kosher?
It won't cook bacon.
It won't cook bacon.
It won't give you bacon on a Saturday.
He couldn't answer that question. And then he told me that something about gosh, it was something about a convection oven. They don't make any convection ovens that are gas. It was wrong. It's just, it was all wrong information. And then here's the other thing. When I bought it, it was full price. It was, I think, $1,499. And I immediately went home after I bought it, and I started searching for a lower price because they Best Buy price matches, and I found a lower price. So I called Best Buy, and I said, you guys price match, right? And they said, yes. I said, well, you price match yourself? And I said, what do you mean? I said, I just bought this in your store, but you have it online for $150 less. Every time I shop at Best Buy now, they have computers for the customers to use. Like, I bought a $600 Dyson vacuum cleaner, and it was cheaper. It was 10% cheaper online at the Best Buy store. And I, because of my previous experience buying the Range, I said, you know, can I look this up online? They said, sure. And you can read the reviews and everything. And I said, will you honor that price that you're offering it for online if I buy this here at your store? And they said, yes, of course. But if you're not a smart consumer and you don't know to do that, that discourages me from wanting to go to the retail store, you know?
Right.
I feel like they're trying to take advantage of me, that I wouldn't have been in that situation if I'd have just did it online.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say that is a really good indication of how we're becoming have and have nots in terms of those with people with online access.
Not just online access, but savvy people with online access.
But I mean, you know, if you've got online access, you're more likely to actually go look for it anyway.
That's interesting too. But before we get too far away from what Carrie was saying, I think at the height, the world has changed. The big box retail store that kind of reached its peak at the dot-com first bubble, because there weren't a lot of people buying stuff online at the first bubble. Like, I think that's the last time I saw the biggest construction. Maybe some of that is just the general economy too, but of just the big box stores, the shopping centers that just have Borders, Sports Authority, Office Depot, you know, like the five big set things. At the height of their arrogance, the last time I was at a Borders, which is now out of business, I walked in, you know, trying to find someone to help you who knows the store is like trying to run into an electron at the atomic scale. There's no one there. And at the end, when I finally found someone, they told me to go up to a self-serve computer terminal and search on the borders.com website. I wanted to just walk out of the store right then and say, I'll get it on Amazon. Are you kidding me? I come to your store and you want me to look it up on your website in the store?
No, exactly.
That's where they went out of business.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Yeah. This podcast and many others would not be possible without UK2.net. They're our fabulous, fabulous supporters. We love them to bits. And they do wonders for us. We've got a whole ton of offer codes for you. We're going to get some up on the website this week, I promise you, or tomorrow, hopefully. But basically, it's pretty simple. You just write British Tech, and then all you have to do is change the last few things that you put in. So if you put in DNS, Bagel Tech DNS, British Tech, oh, crap. British Tech DNS, then British Tech DNS is going to get you 20% off a DNS transfer charge for DNS management. You type in VPN, you get £50 off the VPN. You type in VPS, you get and you get great deals off all of that. So if you want to buy a domain, anything like that, just type in Bagel Tech and then VPS, DNS, whatever it is, and it'll sort you out. But we'll put a little banner up somewhere on the site that will give you the code specifically about what they do. Without UK2, we would be going out of business. The problem that we've got at the moment is lots and lots and lots of you are using the offer codes. We spoke to Craig this week, and he's very, very happy with the amount that you guys are taking. He says it's a fabulous return on investment for them. They're very, very happy with us. The problem, he said, is it's better for you and it's better for us if you use the click-through on our homepage because of the web traffic that goes to UK2. So please, 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 instead of going direct to UK2, please go to our website first and use the click-through because that gives them tracking information for the fact that we've sent you rather than just turning up. They can't correlate it back because of the codes or something like that. I don't understand it. But please use the click-through is what he's saying. It benefits us as British Tech News far more if you use the click-throughs. And use your click-through when you want to sign into your account as well, because that tells them that you're a recurring customer from Bagel, from British Tech. Just got to get rid of the bagel. Jeez. UK2.net, thank you very much. We love them to bits. Right then, it's time for the cool things. Oh, what have we got for us? James, do you want to start us off, mate?
Well, this is a bit of a first, actually. An app which was designed originally for Android phones, and it's coming to iPhone ultimately. It's called Any.do. I reinstalled my phone with Ice Cream Sandwich and lost all the applications, and I put together sort of a decent list of ones that I use, and you got the usual ones that have gone in there, but I still hadn't got one which manages my tasks. And this one is really elegant, simple, very pretty. It's called Any.do, Any.do. It's amazingly quick. The thing I need most is you scroll to a widget, type something in, and it's in the list. No faffing around, no having to click categories, save, remind me. It defaults to today on the list. Then you can add notes, you can put reminders on, you can put it tomorrow, next week. You can scroll through and categorize things, urgent, not urgent. And the one that happened earlier was I got a phone call and I missed the phone call, and it came up, Any.do popped up with a dialogue saying, do you want to add a reminder to call this person back? Oh, brilliant. Absolutely like excellent. I wrote an email to the Any.do people to say, brilliant app, well done. And they wrote back saying, thanks. And the kind of interaction as well with developers is just something that makes it is that extra star in my book, where you know you're actually communicating with a real person who developed the application. So, yeah, really pleased with this. Any.do. And it's even better, it's free. It's going to come to iPhone eventually, and I think it's going to be possible to sync it with your Gmail tasks, Google calendars as well. So Google tasks as well. So I really, really like it. And a big shout out to them as well.
Sounds excellent, mate. Good pick. Thank you very much. Mr. Holzman, what do you have for us?
Oh, I have the coolest cool thingy ever. Handmade.
So it's a unique item. So people get it. We can't put an Amazon reference up.
No. I guess they could email me and have me make them one. Actually, they're very easy to make. And I understand Sarah has a tie-in to this, actually, speaking of making things. This, if you don't know what this is, then you're not a real nerd, I'm sorry to say. But if you do a YouTube search for Internet in a Box, there's a British TV show, it used to be, called The IT Crowd or The It Crowd. And they had a boss that didn't understand what the internet was and was being particularly mean. And she had to give a speech, and they decided to help her write that speech, and that told her that this was the internet. And it's, of course, wireless. And it normally sits on top of Big Ben to get the best reception. And was demagnetized by Stephen Hawking himself. And they allowed her to borrow it to use in her speech. And, of course, it's very lightweight because, of course, the internet weighs nothing. And it's very small, and that's one of the surprising things people don't know about the internet, is how small it is. So this is something I like to put on my desk in my office, and people have no idea what it is, and I have to explain it. And others who do know what it is see me as a god. They go, oh, you have the internet? So it's actually quite the coolest cool thing ever.
And did you build it from a tiny little bit, or was there a kit, or...?
No, it's just the Radio Shack sells these project boxes. They sell these little metal LED holders. The LED already blinks, so all you have to do is hook a battery up to it.
Put a battery up to it.
That's it. So very, very lightweight.
I'm going to have to get one of them.
I would try and bring this through the airport. The internet doesn't like to travel. And the elders of the internet don't know that I have this. So,
dude, you take that through an airport, you're going to get your ass shot, mate.
Yes. So, yeah, I would not mail these across to another country either.
That's got cavity search written all over it.
Yes. I mean, this is actually how the internet works. Doesn't go across borders.
This is the internet.
I don't know, but it's going to demonstrate proctology, that's for sure.
Anyway, it costs like $2 for the LED and like $1 for the little frame and about $7 for the box. I put two AAA batteries in a holder and soldered it right onto the leads off the LED, and easy peasy. Hardest part was drilling the holes, getting it centered. But
you probably could have bought a router for less off eBay.
Yeah, you're probably right, but it wouldn't be as cool as this.
And then you really would be connected to the internet.
There's no fun in that.
No,
do you have to switch it off when it rains, Carrie?
the internet is always on, and if anything were to happen to this box, planes would fall out of the sky. the world would tumble into chaos. So
you should be handling that with gloves on, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Being very, very gentle.
There's no leads.
Yes, that's the beauty. The internet is wireless.
You've never heard of wireless internet?
No, exactly. Now I know what it is. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sarah. Yeah,
if you guys want to know what we're talking about, one more time, then I'm done. Do a search on YouTube for internet in a box. Then you can catch up with what we're talking about. And you can be a nerd like the rest of us.
Excellent. Sarah, what do you have for us, girl?
Well, my completely coincidentally, mine is actually the place to go to buy the bits if you actually want to build one of those. Because mine is a website. And for those of you that don't know me that well, I got into computers in the first place through interest in electronics, something which I dropped as soon as I discovered computers, and I've recently got back into it again. And I've discovered a couple of guys at work who are also into it, and they recommended this site to me, and I've bought a ton of components from there, including the bits that I was showing on that LED thing earlier on, which is a blinker which I built myself. It's okay. It's only a breadboard, but it actually does work, and it's got a potentiometer on it, so I can actually vary the speed of it. And it's just the start of me getting back into electronics again. And this website has been where I bought all the components from.
Is this website made in Front Page?
I know it's a pretty basic site, but
it's like GeoCities.
It subscribes to the same ethos as I do: is content is king when it comes to websites. But they are quick, cheap, and they've provided everything I've needed in terms of getting back into electronics again, plus some useful links to information elsewhere on the net.
And 100 decibel two-tone piezo siren, what every household needs.
You could do. But it's I've been thoroughly enjoying it. Unfortunately, the last few weeks, I haven't managed to spend much time playing with the components, but I've got boxes of resistors and goodness knows what else underneath my desk. Excellent. That I haven't yet got to and stuff, which I've bought from these people. And they are very quick. In some cases, I've had stuff the next day after I've ordered it. It's arrived.
Won't be seeing you for a beer then the next few weeks.
Well, you know.
Jolly good. And Mr. Lanigan, have you got
anything? Okay, well, if you want some high-octane excitement, then this cool thing is for you. My pick is a video game for the Xbox 360 downloadable from the Xbox.
Before you do it, mate. This is the fourth week in a row that you've had a pick. Where on earth is Eric Lanigan? What have you done with him? It's his invasion of the body snatchers, and you didn't do your research.
Exactly. So this is a downloadable Xbox 360 game. It's only $15, and it's one of those gems of value, one of the best value games you can get, because it's an infinite game. You can keep downloading new tracks for this. It's called Trials Evolution, sequel to Trials HD, which is a very similar game. I've seen this advertised to me on Xbox Live for years, never took an interest in it because I just thought, oh, it's just some generic dirt bike racing game like any other racing game. You know, there are a dime a dozen, and I'm not even into that, so why would I care? Well, it turns out that it's actually a two-dimensional sort of 2.5D game where you're not steering and you're not really racing in the traditional sense. It's much closer to the old Flash game, Line Rider, where if you remember that game where you had the little guy in the bobsled and you'd build the track and then you'd launch him and you'd just hope that the physics engine would allow him to do the loop-de-loops and the big falls
That was me fine. It's all right.
What the heck? And you'd hope that he wouldn't crash, right? The object was not to crash, and it was based on half realistic, they call it advanced physics modeling because it's not so much realistic as it is just very well done. In fact, it said that they had to rewrite the entire physics engine very specially to take up an entire core of the Xbox CPU. So basically, all you're doing is this little guy on the motorcycle is going down the line, is you're controlling the way he leans forward or back, and this is keeping him from falling over and crashing. So as you go up a steep hill, you lean forward a little bit, and then in order to jump across, you have to kind of lean back at the last minute, and then you might tumble or something, and the goal is not to crash. It's very unforgiving. It's very difficult as far as a game goes, like the old two-dimensional games that were very breakneck tricky. Very punishing, very, very, very little room for mistakes. But it's a worthy investment. If you'd spend some time on it, I played it one night. I thought, oh, this is okay, but I'm not really into that. A couple days later, I went back to the demo. I was so much better just from having a little bit of practice. And then once you get into it, you can just play forever and ever because they give you the track editor, the same editor that they made those tracks with. You can edit their tracks. You can download tracks for free in the big track repository where users are submitting and uploading their own tracks for free download. There's all these competitions. It's very creative. Also has a hilarious sense of humor because it uses that ragdoll physics. So when your character crashes, it's very spectacularly painful. And at the end of the track, because the idea is you get the little man through the whole event without injuring himself or crashing in any way. And every track at the end of the finish line, he just careens right off of a ledge or gets smacked into just some horribly comedically painful death at the end of the track once you've survived all the way. So that's my pick, Trials Evolution for Xbox.
Okay, very good, mate. It says it's got mild violence in it.
Yes, cartoon violence.
Oh, okay.
Is that the crashy bit at the end?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's I mean, some of them are just absurd. Like the one, your character gets all the way to the end and you think he's just like, it's sort of like the Simpsons couch gag, right? Where it's like they randomly happen, something randomly bad happens to him. And one, he gets all the way to the end and he's just like sitting there and you think, oh, I guess nothing's going to happen. And then it cuts to a scene from way overhead and the nuclear bombs go, boom. So it's very funny and a very, very good action game.
Right. Trials Evolution. The trials being a trial bike, apparently. Just, yes, got it.
I didn't know that.
It's a trial bike, yeah. That's where it comes from. I got two picks. The first one is just a completely nonsense pick, but it's a lot of fun. Pocket Whip. There you go.
Steady.
You spin it around, and it... there you go. It's a bull whip in your iPhone. That goes off your accelerometer. The other one that I've got is, I mentioned it last week briefly in the chat room after the show because I just got a hold of it. I went to a printer's to do some work and he showed me this little brother printer. And just on his description alone, a little demo that he did of it, I was like, right, I'm buying one. And I paid £108 for it from Ryman Stationers through Amazon. It's the Brother MFC J5910DW. There you go. It's an all-in-one printer that does A3. It scans to email, which is a fantastic feature. You put a whole pile of documents in, and it's got a document feeder. So it scans off the document feeder, and it makes it into a single PDF, and then it puts that PDF in a blank email for you to send who you want it to. There you go. And it's brilliant. The inks as well are what made it, because the inks from Brother are relatively expensive, so I was kind of put off by that. But the guy said, no, go to this place called Silverline on Amazon and you'll get it for a lot cheaper. I bought 20 ink cartridges for £20. So that's about $32 for 20 ink cartridges. And I can't tell the difference. I really can't tell the difference on the ink quality. It looks exactly the same. I haven't had it long enough to see if it fades any faster. And I can buy 10 black cartridges for £10 as well off the same people. Silverline. There you go. For £108, it was a really good purchase. I'm well chuffed with it. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
The usual place, Syzygy on Twitter, SYZYGY. Don't bother looking for me on Google+ unless you send me an email.
Yeah.
How that works.
Go there once a month. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Mr. Holzman, you're not on Twitter.
I am not. However, you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/Kerry Holzman, and you can listen to my weekly podcast with my good friend Mike Smith on the trials and tribulations of running a computer repair business, and that's at www.tech-vets.com. That's short for Veterans of Technology.
Excellent. DT in the chat room has said, isn't it racist to call a black printer brother? Oh. Very good.
That's good.
Sarah, where can we get you, Mrs.?
You can get hold of me on best places on the Twitters, as aforementioned Twitter, favourite social media app, at Sarah Jane UK.
Thank you, Mrs. And Mr. Lanigan, where are you?
That would be, I'm at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/EricLanigan, ericlanigan.
Excellent. I'm Ewan Rankin on Twitter, at Ewan Rankin, EwanRankin. There you go. I can spell my own name just like Eric. And you can follow us on the network at British Tech News on Twitter as well. We're going to be back tomorrow. We've got the first show at 2 o'clock. We've got the Mac show at 3:30. We've got the Daily Show in the morning, which isn't daily, but I've done three this week. How good am I? And then we'll be back on Sunday night. or Monday night with the F1 show, but we haven't decided yet. We need to try and get in touch with everyone. But we'll be here for one of those, and it's the
Spanish
Grand Prix. That's it. So it's Alonso at his home thing,
and he's Barcelona.
He's been extending the olive branch to everyone this week, saying how much he wants it to get back to where everybody respected and loved each other. That chance,
man. Ewan,
yes,
I've just been told there's a new podcast called The Gamer.
Yes, we have a new podcast called The Gamer. It's The Gamer Show, and it's just been accepted in iTunes as well. You can get it on the website. It's a guy called Paul Wheatley and two other guys that he's mates with, and the three of them sit around a table with three microphones and shoot the breeze on the week's gaming news and gaming. And it's excellent. It's a good listen. I was talking to to everyone that came for a beer last night about it, and when Paul sent me a pilot and said, what do you think, do you want it on the network, he does everything that I would like in a podcast. It's just the three of them sitting down chit chatting like you're eavesdropping on them, and it's kind of the Sunday morning conversation that they've had on the phone or something like that. 45 minutes long. Well, perfect. Loved it.
Going straight into my downcast feed.
Thank you. Listened to the first one and was very impressed. Little Git's really good at it. Right. I've been doing this 4 years, and I'm not that good. No, it's good. It grows. We've got a Welsh language podcast coming on as well. And also, I'm trying to get Rage back. I really want to get Rage back into the fold somehow. But if anyone wants to do Rage, give me a shout. But you've got to be able to rage.
Shout.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.